I was fortunate to, I had to have a job. I was fortunate to get this job of assisting this Professor Pitt, whose field was American literature.
What was his name?
Shane Berger, now deceased, S-C-H-O-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R. Wonderful guy who had no patience for details, which was a help for me because he wasn't interested in correcting examination papers or reading themes, which he assigned frequently because he didn't have to read them. And I did all that work. Well, since I knew the student's achievements or lack thereof better than he, it was my province to grade them. And at the end of this particular year, I did it for only 1 year because I earned enough to get into law school the next year. And by the way, when he was absent, for whatever reason, I would teach his course. So this is where the teaching experience came in at the University of Pittsburgh. His area was Poe, Emerson, and Thoreau and the like. I was doling out the grades, and I come across the name of this young lady whose record in this course was full of holes. She had missed two examinations, which he had not made up, and was minus three or four theses. And even though she was a senior, I had to give her a bust. I had to give her a flunk, because there was nothing in this program, at least, for me to go on, or not enough. I couldn't give her an incomplete, because that meant in those days that she hadn't attended enough for us to give her anything. Well, so out go the grades, and a couple of days later, there was a loud pounding at the office door. And this young lady, not exactly unattractive, with face flushed and with fists clenched, said that she would like to see Dr. Shaneberger. And I said, well, I'm sorry, Dr. Shaneberger's out of the city. Is there anything I can do to help? I'm his assistant. She says, yes, by my grade. I got a flunk. Oh, I said, you must be the young lady who is lacking in themes and examinations. Well, she said that that's true, but there were reasons for them. Well, I said, I received no reasons. It's just blanks. I can't rest my grade on blanks.
There was no such thing as an incomplete?
As I say, there was an incomplete, but it did not apply in this case because she had attended enough classes to avoid the incomplete. It would not have been.
What's her name?
The correct. So I said, your name again? She says it's Spiro, Minnie Spiro. I said, yes, Miss Spiro, that's it. I don't know what I can do. Well, she says, I can't graduate. That's the main character. I can't graduate. Well, I said, I don't know what to do about it. I certainly don't want to prevent your graduating, and these grades are due by the end of this week, which was a matter of 3 days. I said, well, you want to try and make them up, give me something to go on. I'll keep an open mind and I'll keep an open door, but it means two examinations and three themes. How in heaven's name are you going to do it? Make out the examinations and say, well, I ended up having to give her a B. Her other grades were A. They didn't influence me. I mean, I had no choice. The gal could do it. She was just as a social learner. She was a butterfly or some damn thing. That's the last of summer. Well, I enrolled at law school. In the first day of class, I'm going through, see some of the files, some from Harvard, some from there. And who do I run into but Minnie Spiro? She's enrolled in law school, too. And I said, you? She said, yeah, you. And, well, hello, I'm sorry, everything's forgotten, all that sort of thing. Well, in those days, it was easier to get into law school. All you needed was the diplomate, the college certificate. But it wasn't quite as easy to stay in. There were much crew. As a matter of fact, might interest you to know that 199 entered in our class and 99 finished. We lost 100, by the way. Among these 199 were 8 females. Law didn't attract females in those days as it does now, because it was just damn tough for a female. And who wanted to go through all that grief? Females wanted to get married and have kids. They didn't want to go 3 years and acts and all that. Well, she was born and raised in Butler County, and she was hot for the law. Well, school gets underway, and after the first month or two, you are supposed to break down into groups for discussion purposes, because law, being not an exact science, has no precise answers. You and I can argue about a case, and you can come to a logical conclusion which is contrary to what the court has decided, and yet you certainly are entitled to credit for your work. If it's 2 plus 2 and it isn't 4, go home, but not with the law. So our group consisted of 7 guys, some of whom are still practicing, a couple of whom have died. And this particular evening, I am sharing our frugal meal with my folks, and the phone rings, and it's Spiro. To this day, I don't call her Minnie, because Minnie is for horses. So I call her Spiro. Anyway, this is Spiro on the phone. People think we're crazy, but this is her. She's on the phone. I have a favor to ask of you. Yeah, I mean, yes. I tried to organize a group with the women. Unfortunately, none of them lives in town. Bless you. They all live in suburban Pittsburgh, one in Beaver Falls, and one in New Kensington, and one someplace, all someplace. And they commute. I have nobody to discuss. I got to get into a group. Well, at least I know you, and she knew too. The other guys, one lives across the street, by the way, one of them still practicing law. Young fellow named Rosenzweig. She said, I know you and Aaron Rosenzweig and this one. At least I can approach you. Would you mind if a female joined the group? I don't want any special favors, just another guy. Well, I said, I appreciate your position. It's all right with me, but I gotta ask the other guys. I can't speak for them. Well, I asked them, a couple grumbled. One said, geez, if you have a gal in there, suppose one of these hot nights, I want to take my pants off, and I want to take my shirt off, and I want to run around indecently exposed and shout and scream. I can't do this with a woman. Well, he said, I don't know. I can't speak for her. I don't know, except I flunked her once. I don't know her too well, We can work that out. I hate like the devil to say no to this woman, because she's the only one of the 8 who does not commute. She stayed with relatives here in town, went home over the weekend, one of those things. Well, okay, they agreed, fine. And she joined the group. And during her law school, I'll never marry a smart one again. This is the last smart one. She was a goddamn smart, that she was ahead of most of us. At any rate, her mind works too fast, and she had reached the conclusion before we knew what was going on, see? And they were blaming me, you lost things. Well, they got to the point where they enjoyed. And by the way, they not only enjoyed her being in the group, but I remember when we were studying for the bars are given in July and January here. Well, we were studying for the July bars. And that particular year, not only was the temperature high, but the humidity was unbearable. And I remember this night we rotated at one another's homes, except hers, because we didn't go to Butler. But it was at my home, and it was hot as hell. And we were dealing with a very difficult case, which we figured would involve the principal that we'd have on the exam. And you can fairly well figure out these exams. Content-wise, they're pretty much the same, although the cases are different. and we were screaming and yelling. And we were all, I was down in my shorts. One guy had his private swinging around there, and she was down to her slip. But it was just like a clinic. She was no more a female than that Joseph Goto piece there. And we're yelling and screaming, and this was the way it was. She was, to all purposes, a male. Well, when it came to bars, and I told this, I didn't take the bars here. I took them in Philadelphia because I took the cram course there. All the others took the cram course here. I didn't have enough confidence in the guy who was giving the cram course, and I went to Philadelphia. But I understand that the examination here, it's 2 days of 8 hours each. And then in those days, it was a heller. From 8 to 5, at 4 o'clock, it's given the soldiers and sailors home. She was smoking pretty heavily at that time. She's ready to leave. So this guy across the street nabs her. Says, you can't, wait, she's unfinished. Says, you can't leave now, it's demoralizing. The rest of us aren't finished, you can't walk out now, it'll upset things. We said, I have no more to write. He said, go on back and read it again. Maybe you made a mistake. Maybe you left something. I says, I want a cigarette. I want to go out. Okay, smoke and come back. There's not a lot of smoke in the examination. So 5 minutes later, she goes back. She sits down. 5 minutes later, she's up. She's going again. And this guy says to her on the way out, you'll regret this. You're going to bust these bars because you did it too fast, leaving things out. Well, as it turned out, he had a hell of a time getting through. She got through handily the first time. She went immediately to practice. Well, during this time, I have a date with her once in a while and so forth. And so the woman I flunked later became my wife. And this is how I met her. She reminds me to this day. She went to Butler to practice, and because she would not practice in a large county. She said that Butler County, the number of attorneys in the entire Butler County is 55. I can get along with 55 attorneys. I can't get along with 2,000 in Allegheny County. Besides, I was born and raised there. I know the community. The community knows me and my folks. I think I can build up a practice. And she was smart, not only to that extent, but also because she got referrals. When somebody asked me, and I was practicing, I was admitted here, I practiced here, somebody would ask me, you know, a good attorney in Butler County. Well, whom would I refer them to? And she developed a business.
Was she in practice for herself or with the?
No, in small counties, they very seldom go with a firm. She opened on her own. She was the only woman in the county, and she was the only Jew at the bar. Now, what did she have to follow? Preceding her by 5 or 6 years was another Jew who was disbarred. So she had to follow that image. And you may or may not know that in those days, you had to pass a character examination when you were admitted to law school. And after you were finished, you have to pass another character examination before you were admitted to practice. So she's going through, she had hit the bars, and she's exposed to her character examination in Butler by a committee of three who were passing the final judgment. One member of the committee was a devout Roman Catholic. I had met him once or twice. All I know about him was that since he was 6 weeks old, he had never smiled. Well, he during the examination, he said, well, you know, Miss Spiro, I don't know how to put this, and hope that you will accept it as graciously as possible, but you have lived here all your life and you know about the experience that we have with attorney so-and-so, and he mentions the name of this guy who was disbarred. Yes, I remember that. And of course, you know that the Ku Klux Klan has been very active around here, and one of the reasons for their activity is that there have been some members of your faith that have been particularly aggressive. So this son of a bitch that I'm married to decides to go whole hog. She's going to put her career on the line, because if you don't get the okay from the committee, you are not admitted. And if you are not admitted to practice in your home state, no other state will pick you up, obviously. As a matter of fact, no other county will pick you up if your own county doesn't accept you. She said, Mr. So-and-so, I hope I'm not looking for ghosts on the bedpost, but I object respectfully to your line of questioning and your remarks. I said, if you insist on bringing into this examination elements that are utterly irrelevant, if you are attempting to reflect on my people, who I think established by and large as good a reputation in this community as any other people, minority though they may be, you leave me no choice but to go to the grievance committee of the Butler Bar Association about you. Well, he spat and he harumphed and he cleared his throat and he almost died, because at that time he was approaching 70, has long since, of course, turned to stone. His two colleagues on the committee wanted to stab him to death. They looked at him horrified. Of course, they couldn't embarrass him by going up to Miss Spiro and hugging her. They wanted to do so, and it so happened that one of the other members of the committee turned out to be her sponsor, her great, great good friend, and helped her establish her practice, because he threw to her, he had an excellent practice there, he threw to her minor, smaller cases that he couldn't handle to help her get started. Because I don't think I have to tell you, attorneys can't solicit. We can't go out and dig up business without getting the axe. So she developed a very fine practice there, I think largely because she served on the hospital board. She was president of the American Association of University Women. She was president of the council chapter, one of the officers of ADASA. She was president of the Quota Club, having been the first Jew to be taken into that organization and all that. And also, this kind of alliance, these activities helped develop business. It was not easy sailing at first, because it being a farm community, farmers still feel that the place of the woman is around the sink, and I can't entrust my private affairs, my financial affairs, to somebody who should be mothering children and cooking dinner and so forth. Well, I got to know in time that she ain't this kind of a broad, and she practiced up to and including the time I came home from the service. I'm getting a little ahead.
Now, you were not married at this time.
Yeah.
You were. You kept calling her
Miss
Spiro with the
thing. Married.
Yeah, I'm sure I do now.
All right. When were you married? I'm sorry about that.
Well, we got married in 1936. We were admitted in 1932. 4 years later, we were married. And because she insisted on practicing in Butler County, for which I can't blame her, for the first 9 years of our marriage, we did not live together. It was a weekend marriage. She couldn't commute because she had too many community commitments in the evening. These organizational and community activities kept them there. So she was a weekend wife, and all of my friends, of course, were envying me because, after all, naturally, and I remember one talking with her one day. The weather wasn't too good, and I said, well, you don't have to come in this weekend if you don't want to hazard the weather and drive in. She drove back and forth. But if you do see fit to come in, I'll buy you a Coke. She came in and bought a coat. It was a line. The line wasn't too clear, you see. So she came in and bought the coat instead of the coat. Anyway, this kind of crazy business. I went into practice with a few of my colleagues. Frankly, I never cared for the law. I'm not so sure that one's devotion to one's parents should go that far. I would much rather have gone into public relations and advertising. in the law, but I went in to please my father. I didn't do too badly because I couldn't afford not to earn because I was helping to support my folks. It's a long story about my stepfather. When he married my mother, he was very well off, but the real estate business collapsed just about the time I was going to college. And then, of course, 1929, I don't have to tell you about, I hope. This is when the stock market laid us low. And in my second year in law school, I forgot to mention, our banks closed. That's when Roosevelt, our commencement speaker, came in and saved things. But not entirely, because my father and I were both caught in a bank crash, out of which we succeeded in getting something like 11% of our deposits. The tragedy with me at that time was, and I know that this is kind of is becoming a mélange de guerre, I suppose, at the risk of seeming hodgy-podgy, let me come back. In order to keep on earning, I had jobs during my undergraduate career because my mother used to remind me, and she virtually had to raise me because I had no father for 7 years. She kept reminding me that you have a choice either between earning a decent dollar when you can or becoming another John Dillinger. Well, I didn't want to become a baby-faced Nelson or a John Dillinger, and so she insisted on my working. I am not going to support you except with the necessaries. Get out and work. So, in the summers, I had a job at a boys' camp. Several boys' camps, as a matter of fact, and I got into that work in the summer purely on a hoax by my mother, Rebecca. We're sitting on the porch that my mother was very friendly with the sister of a man who ran a camp in New York State, and he came to Pittsburgh this particular summer looking for more campers, more business, and also a counselor. He needs a counselor from here because the counselor he had outgrown the job.
How old were you then?
This summer I was about 21. I had worked at various jobs before that in the summer. As a matter of fact, the year before, by lying about my age, I got a job on a banana boat between here and Ecuador. Yeah, the only thing that I had to watch out for was tarantulas, of course, because down in Ecuador, they didn't dust off the bananas to this extent. But I seen the world and carrying bananas. At any rate, that ran out after the year, so this is beginning of the summer. And this guy comes to town, he realizes he's very late. This is about a month before camp is open, ready to open. And he needed it constantly badly. So one night, my mother's together with him and the family, and he said, geez, I wish I could find a counselor somewhere. And she says, what's the matter with my son? So he said, well, does he have any camp? He said, oh, yeah. I never saw the inside of a camp. I couldn't afford a camp. She says, oh, yes, he's an experienced camper. And yes, sir. Knows what a hospital corner is.
Well, she savvy, said, didn't she?
Oh, my. A nerve. Chutzpah, we call it. Yeah, sure, yes, yeah, yes, a hospital corner. I was lucky I knew what a hospital was, much less a hospital corner. Well, it so happened that I got the job through this deviousness of my mother.
What were your duties in the job?
Well, I had charge of a group.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, at this camp, there was such a thing as a junior counselor. So the junior counselor I had assigned to me knew all this stuff. So I got them together the first night behind the bunk. I said, look, I don't know a damn thing about this. You got to see what's a hospital corner. Let me stand around for a few days and watch it. And I'll try to look smart. Well, I picked up things there. And this was at a very nice camp in the Berkshire Hills in Massachusetts. After 2 years there, I got a job at Racket Lake.
Racket Lake?
Racket Lake, which is in the Adirondacks. And oddly enough, Racket Lake is 60 miles from where my son is now officiating as a rabbi. Because Racket Lake is part of what is known as the Fulton Chain in New York, of which Lake George is one. So he's on Lake George, and I was up there at Racket. Well, so I'm working these summers, and when I'm even a year after I'm admitted, I work 1 year up there I was still in law school. It was my second year, and this particular year, with commissions that I got for new campers and my salary at camp, I'm able to deposit about $1,300 in the bank, and great. Yeah, I'm withdrawing enough, ready withdraw enough for my tuition for the final year at law school, and I'm on easy street. Except that the bank's closed. And so my father and I meet on the street to pool our funds. And I remember that day we had exactly, between us and the whole, or $7.50. I had $2.50 and he had $5. And the bank across the street's dead. Well, I had to borrow to go to school, naturally, I didn't have any money. Well, I finished law school. The people from whom I borrowed were great people. I borrowed only on condition that I would pay them back in not over 2 years. And you know what? It took me 2 years. They wanted to give it to me as a gift, and I wouldn't take it. Not because I'm trying to bust into heaven, but I didn't play that kind of pool and bail with it. I'll pay you back. I don't know when. It took me 2 years. So I opened my office with a couple of other thieves, because in those days you didn't hook up with firms. You started out on your own. And for about a year, we prayed that a book salesman would walk in so we could hear the sound of a human voice. Or maybe a dog would wander in and bark so that we could hear some. So we sweated it out and we starved.
Where was this? Right here in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, down in Fifth. As a matter of fact, right across from the jail in Fifth Avenue, we had our office on the second floor. And there were four of us because we had to share expenses. And we also shared a secretary. She did the work for four of us, which meant that she didn't do too much work because we were all starving. Oh, we played cards. We played anagrams. We had a quartet. There were four of us, naturally, and I sang bass. And we had a lovely time, except we didn't eat too regularly. And yet, I had to work hard. Well, while I'm starving there, I get a call from a gentleman by the name of David Alder. Who's David Alder? He owns and publishes what is known as the Jewish Criterion, which is the Anglo-Jewish publication in this town, the forerunner of the Jewish Chronicle, which you should not be caught reading. He wanted me to see him. I said, well, why don't you come up? I said, here's business. You come down to my office. I said, why don't you come up to mine? I got an office. Shabby as it is, an office. Because attorneys don't like the idea of running out to see clients. If you want to see your physician, he doesn't come to you. Of course, he doesn't come to you at all now. He used to come. But, no, he says, it's not about anything legal either. Oh, boy, there's business. No, well, somebody has suggested that I become the editor of the Jewish Criterion. Oh, my writing days in high school, and I've done a little bit, so to this day, I don't know who my benefactor or benefactress was. So we entered into an arrangement. I said, only part-time. I'm not going to give up a practice of law. And you didn't have to have it full-time. I had a staff that I administered, directed. So while I was practicing law, I became the editor of the Jewish Criterion, and that's how I ate. For a while. Well, business started coming. The end of the second year, I was picked up by a guy by the name of Elmer Ecker, who headed a firm here. He died not so long ago. He's the father of Jimmy Ecker. And many a time, I bounced Jimmy on my knee and ended up with wet pants. But then that's what you do for the boss's kids. And his brother, Ronald Ecker. They'd be more your generation. Hers, are you familiar with them? So I worked in this firm for their old man.
What was the name of the firm?
Ecker, Duff, and Dunn. D-U-N-N. And things began looking up. And it was very nice of Mr. Ecker to let us conduct or handle our own cases so long, in addition to the firm's, so long as the case did not interfere with them. So I'm not only on the payroll, but I'm picking up a little on the side. You don't find this today, believe me. Because any business that I pick up while I'm a member of the firm goes into the firm, wasn't that naturally? I wouldn't have complained if it had been that way then, but I'm not going to scream at my benefactor either. Well, I am practicing law here, and Miss Biro is practicing in Butler, and it may come to you as a great shock that a war was on at the time. I can't claim my wife as a dependent. I have no children. And I'm after all subject to the draft. At that time, we had two draft boards in this area. One that took care of things south of Forbes, and one that